We entered Caracas as morning rose steaming over the city, the hover dropping down into a haze turned rosy. Tianz had given the controls up to Lucas, who guided us down through freight lanes and streams of regular commuter traffic. The Nichtfren had vanished, and I wondered, not for the first time, where he spent his days. If there was a spot for him to sleep during daylight on the hover, it was well hidden. Van pushed a battered, bruised, and bandaged Leander out into the main cabin, not very roughly. From where I sat, straight-backed in a chair, mage-sealed to the flooring with my sword over my knees, I could clearly see the damage done to Leander's face. It turned my stomach.
Bring him.
Jaff stood, staring out a porthole dewed with condensation. Van escorted Leander across the hover's length. Lucas glanced over his shoulder, turned back to the controls with a shrug. The message was clear. Leander was on his own. Jaframel let the necromance stew for a bit. I kept staring at Leander's accreditation tat, his emerald sparkling with the presence of his god.
Is he praying? Will it do him any good?
Jaframel clasped his hands behind his back.
Do you know why you are still alive?
Leander shot me a glance, his dark eyes widening.
Exactly. You are alive because it pleases my Hedera to see you so, and because it does not matter. There is no compelling reason to remove you. Still, it is a marvelous turn of events that one such as you would help a demon in rebellion against the prince.
Does Jeff just mean that he's human and helping out a demon, or does he mean something else? Hegemony Federal, which means Leander's domestic internal affairs. Field Agent, which means his Matheson score was over the moon to tip him into the domestic defense program as an active instead of an analyst.
I watched the necromance turn pale. He was sweating now. Jaframel turned away from the porthole and let the full force of his glowing eyes rest on Leander. Van stepped back, a move calculated to make the necromance subconsciously aware he was alone. Leander handled it well, shrugging and folding his bruised arms. He wasn't cuffed or mage-taped. The habit of years of bounty hunting rose under my skin.
Well, that's wrong. He's a combat-trained scion, a hegemony field agent, and if I was hauling him somewhere, I would make damn sure he was trussed up tighter than a Putchkin Yule turkey.
But really, what could he do?
I'm a sucker for bright-eyed girls with cute smiles.
He actually flashed Jaframel a cocky grin, but a chemical tang of fear spilled through the air. I had to give him points for sheer brass. I couldn't help myself. Jaframel's eyes flickered toward me.
You are an agent of the human government. You are Lucifer's tool just as surely as a Hellasfront vassal. Why would you, a human, aid a demon in rebellion against the prince?
Wait a second. The hegemony...
Do you really think Lucifer would allow it to remain in power if it was not thoroughly subject to his will?
But the Alliance...
It suddenly occurred to me that surely if the hegemony was controlled, the Putchkin Alliance would be as well. And they were the only games in town as far as governments went, unless you were a free town with an independent charter. And sometimes even then... The hegemony and Putchkin often function as one world government with two major departments rather than rivals. With thermonuclear capability and the freedom of information traffic nowadays, rivalry doesn't make sense.
Oh.
I'd never bothered to think about just how deep the net of financial and other assets demons held on Earth was. But to think that those resources reached up into the government itself, that the hegemony might be infested with Lucifer's influence?
Is there anything around that demons don't control?
Hades, I never thought you were such an optimist, Valentine.
Oh, shut up.
You're working for Lucifer?
I work for my division. We get orders from higher up. You came to New Prague while I was following an arms trafficking ring. I'd almost gotten in, too. 8 months of work down the drain as soon as I got word you were in town, and I was to try and make contact if I could. 17 agents in the city got that message, but I was the only one unlucky enough to stumble across you. I was supposed to ID, keep a lock on you, and call in a strike. Orders from high up. They didn't want you dead, just something noisy enough to draw attention to you. I was waiting for the teams to get into position when a hover falls out of the sky and some idiot lets off a plas cannon.
Plot and counterplot. Everyone has an agenda. And me, blundering through the middle of it all, trying to keep my head above water. Bait intended to draw Eve out so Lucifer can close his filthy paws on her. All my struggling and striving has been next to useless.
And instead of treading water, I'd finally drowned. So who dropped the hover on me?
You were not the target.
Jaframel hadn't moved his attention. It was still on Leander.
Though the strike was aimed at you, it was me they intended to kill. I have other enemies, Hedera, and your death would be a prize to any of them. Lucifer cannot control the avenues from hell to your world any longer. We are on the brink of chaos.
Tell me something I don't know.
I got a directive after that while we were in Saint City.
The hover banked. A wide, shallow turn that meant Lucas had probably spotted our landing area. Van leaned over his shoulder, murmuring something.
I was supposed to hook up with Omega. Well, that's what we call her, Project Omega, and liaise to neutralize him.
A quick sketch of a movement. His chin jerked toward Jeff.
Project Omega?
Hello? The hegemony knows about Eve? Did they know about Santino, too?
I had the answer to that one.
Of course. Trying to hunt Santino down after he'd killed Doreen was just one closed door after another. No help from law enforcement, ostensibly because the murdering bastard had incorporated under the mob laws, and those files were sealed, unable to be opened for a simple homicide, no matter how hard Gabe and I tried to link him to the other serial murders. You'd think they would have cooperated. Now I'm beginning to see why they hadn't.
The memory of Gabe and me working together, frustration and grief making us both walking time bombs, finally giving up but never really stopping to pick at the scab of Doreen's death, sent a pang right through me. The mess inside my skull twinged, turning over. I owed Gabe. I'd promised to look after her daughter.
Broken promises, a trail of deceit and manipulation. Just throw Danny Valentine into the snake pit and watch her jump.
She was supposed to be the hegemony's way of slipping loose of Lucifer. If we had access to her, we could experiment. There was a whole division ready to do testing. A real, live, cooperative demon to study? It's the fucking Holy Grail. The scientists went gaga. Then something happened, she vanished, and the goddamn demons had her. We couldn't figure out what you had to do with it, and how you'd ended up involved with him.
Another jerk of his chin toward Jeff.
It was decided to just keep you under surveillance and see if the demons would bite again. They did, and I got sent in.
God. So that's why you were so intent on sticking around.
And I let you. I even tried to protect you.
Got a job to do. You know how it is, Valentine.
The worst thing is, I do.
Our descent evened out.
They're Hell's Front agents too, Van and McKinley. Why does Jaframel trust them? Did he lie when he told me they were agents? I don't know what to believe anymore.
So what's your job now?
Right now, I'll settle for staying alive. I've missed 4 call-ins. They probably think I'm dead. No big loss, just another agent down in the crossfire.
His shoulders hunched. The crossed arms more of a defense now.
We're expendable, even the Scions. You get to knowing that for a while and it does funny things to your head.
Is he fishing for sympathy? I don't have a whole hell of a lot left over for anyone but myself, and even that's in short supply.
The hover juddered a bit as landing gear unfolded. Jaff's glowing eyes met mine, and I could have sworn he was asking me for something. I couldn't understand what. I simply stared, my brain shivering between past and present. A monstrous design coming clear.
Hey, Gemini? Lucifer? Jaframel? Eve? Is there anyone still alive who hasn't wanted to use me? When did I become such a game piece? Yeah, just pick me up, put me down, shove me from one place to the other. Even what Lucifer did wasn't directed at me. It was a way to hurt Jaframel, catch Eve. I wasn't even worth personalized violence. No, it's all about who he can hurt through me.
Even my god, my safety in times of trouble, my refuge. had used my obedience to his will to spare a murdering Sedain who had killed my best friend. Slaying a defenseless healer was a violation of who I was, but still, there was no way, standing over her with my sword in my hand, that I could have kept every vow I'd made to my god, to my friend, or to myself.
And now this. Gods, demons, the government, everyone has their finger in the pie. Even Jaframel, who probably isn't telling the whole truth either. He's conducting his own war against Lucifer, a war that sounds like it started before you were born. He might just be a convenient excuse, no matter what affection he feels for you. Affection. Call it what it is, Danny. He loves you, but he won't tell you the whole truth. Nobody will.
My left hand tightened on Fudoshin's scabbard.
By every god that ever was, I hate being used. Are there any more lies waiting to be discovered? I'll bet there are. You better start thinking how you're gonna get out of this one alive, Danny. And once you do, where in the world will you be safe? Nowhere. There's gonna be game after game as long as Lucifer's alive. The devil doesn't give up easily.
That left just one option. Playing back. I'd lied, too. My sorceress will was strong, despite my betrayal of my sworn word in circumstances beyond my control, but still inexcusable. It was an article of faith that my word was my bond, that I used my words, my voice, to control and shape the power necessary to bring a soul back from the dry land of death, so it was best to speak softly and do what I said I would. Wasn't that who I was? Who I had decided to be?
How far can I lie and still keep my own soul?
It was another article of faith that Jaframel loved me, would always come for me, and would do his best to see me through this alive.
Is that enough to excuse the lies? How much can I weigh each part of that equation?
Yet another article of faith. That my god would never abandon me by asking me for more than I could give. My emerald spat a single spark, my cheek prickling as the tat moved, a thorny caduceus twisting under my skin.
Not Anubis. Sekhmet. You should swear by her now.
Who answered when I lay bleeding? Who had not broken faith with me?
Who have you not broken faith with, Necromance?
Dante? It is your decision. I will spare him as a gift to you. Still, he is a liability. This dog's loyalty is to his masters.
The color drained from Leander's face. It would have been funny if I'd been in a humorous mood. Why anyone was scared of me while Jaff was around was beyond me. Still, I considered Leander, holding his dark eyes with mine. My left thumb caressing the lacquer of the scabbard. The sword rang softly inside his sheath, just aching to be drawn.
Compassion is not your strongest virtue, Danyo-san.
My teacher's voice when he handed the sword to me. A warning I hadn't known the depths of.
Compassion. It keeps fucking me up every time. Staying my hand when I should strike. Being honorable. Submitting to my god or my ethics. Doing the right thing. What the hell is the right thing now? Has there ever been one right thing?
I used to be so certain.
Didn't I used to know what to do no matter what?
Leave him alone. Give him back his weapons. If he needs killing, I'll do it. I held Leander's gaze with mine, and whatever he saw on my face could not have been pleasant. If they've given you up for dead, Beaudry, I suggest you start rethinking where your loyalty lies. With that, I turned on my heel and stalked for the cabin. Caracas was a center of resistance during the last third of the American era, digging in its heels as the evangelicals of Gilead rose and the Vatican bank scandal began to unfold. When the Republic reached its height of power, Caracas and Old Venezuela were a major clearinghouse for supplies to be sent to Central America, where shamans and others fought the desperate guerrilla battles against the Republic's tide. Scions flooded over the borders during the Awakening, joining in the fight against the Gilead fanatics who considered us subhuman worthy only of extermination, just like anyone else who got in their way. In pretty much every language now, Gilead is a dirty word. Republic isn't far behind. You can only fight the whole world for so long before the world starts fighting back. A lesson the evangelicals didn't learn while they choked on their own blood after the 70 Days War. But then, fundamentalists aren't bright thinkers. Fanaticism tends to blind people. Caracas is built with plasteel and sandy-colored preformed concrete. The crash of petroleo as an energy source had hit here hard, but the war and its buildup provided the city with the chance to become a major trade hub, which the entire country grabbed with both hands. Or, it should be said, which the anarcho-syndicalist collectives who had taken over day-to-day running of the country after the crash seized with all hands. The Venezuela territory is still administered by those collectives, which make it the nearest thing to a free town in the hegemony. The old proverb is, in Caracas, you can make 10 fortunes in a week and lose 15. Just about anything can be bought or sold there, and head on its way in less than an hour to another port. Only in Shanghai is turnover quicker. In short, it's so busy, it's easy to hide a hover. Which was great since we weren't inconspicuous in a freight transport the size of a small building. We landed in a deep transport well, the hover powering down. It was an anonymous berthing, at least until someone started running registry traces.
How many people are looking for me now? How many are looking for Eve?
I turned away from the porthole where I had been staring blankly at strips of reactive and double synaptic relays, feeling the familiar urban wash, the surf roar of many mines squeezed into square miles. Jeff Rommel's borrowed power kept the screaming chaos away. If he withdrew it, my shields were in no shape to cope, even with the repair work going on. And forget about taking a direct hit, sorceress or psionic. I was as vulnerable as it was possible to be without him. It was a wonder the connections inside my head hadn't fused, turning me into a mumbling idiot.
Is that good luck or bad?
Van opened the door, his face set and composed, shades of brown overlapping and the whites of his eyes startling. A brief glance, then he stared at the floor.
Jaff wants you. If you would like to come, that is.
Oh, I wonder what new parade of heart-stopping excitement he's got planned next. Another decoy?
I gave Van my best fuck you sunshine glare.
Am I really all that necessary?
He moved into the cabin, smoothly, freeing himself from the door.
To him, so to us. Hellesfront is the prince's toy. But McKinley and I, and some others, were recruited by Jaff. We're his shadow organization, his vassals, inside. Something happens to him, we're left without protection. Sometimes the only thing keeping a demon from unzipping your guts is fear of the other demon, the one you belong to. So we'd like to keep you breathing, for his sake.
Glad to hear it.
Van's thin mouth stretched into a mirthless grin.
You should be. If we didn't, there'd be no place on Earth you could hide.
You know, that sounds an awful lot like a threat.
Not a threat. The truth.
The Caracas street was all hot sunshine and bright colors. They paint the sandy concrete in primary colors outside. Under that sun, it's an assault. The head reeling and the breath suddenly stopped by a riot of color.
I don't like it. Leander in there is just an invitation for old Blue Eyes to get loose.
Leander was locked in the cabin I'd vacated, and Eve was in the hold, surrounded by a thin silver line.
It matters little.
Jeff Rommel walked with his hands clasped behind his back. The heat painted every surface, a wet Sudro-American heat, smelling of tamales, rice, beef cooked in spices, and the ever-present coconut oil. Van and McKinley flanked me, McKinley hanging back on my right, Van close enough to touch me on my left. Between them, Jeff Rommel and Lucas, I was beginning to feel hemmed in.
If the necromance sets her free, where will she go? Lucifer will not care what prey is snared in his nets, and will not treat her kindly now. I am her only chance. and my Hedera is her only chance for mercy. No, I think the Androgyne will remain our guest for some time.
Jaffermil took his bearings. He looked suddenly out of place, a tall, golden-skinned man in a long black coat under the oppressive yellow weight of sunlight. He finally tilted his head back down. He reached back with one hand, his fingers open, and I didn't think twice. Just stepped forward and laced mine into them.
Walk with me.
It was suddenly like every other time I'd ever been beside him, close to the not-human heat from his skin. Even my rage retreated from him.
Where are we going?
To see a Magi. It's not far.
It's not hard to hide in cities. That is, in the right parts of cities. As a bounty hunter, you get the feel for a place where nobody asks questions. The red light districts, the bordellos and hash dens. The places where a drink makes you friends and another drink makes you liable to get killed one way or another. Places where the air is thick with sex and violence. Psychic static to hide even the stain of a demon on the ether. Unfortunately, we were in the wrong part of Caracas. It was a quiet, upscale neighborhood. And we walked down a sidewalk in the shade of giant, gene-spliced palms, broad fronds drenching the sidewalk with relative coolness. There were no crowds and precious little cover. The houses were large, high sand-colored walls surrounding gardens that peeped through iron gates. Several had shimmers of shielding over them, each with its particular tang, a shaman's spiked honey smell, another with the earth taste of a skinlin. At least Jaff's shielding didn't stop me from seeing here.
Welcome to the Psionic District. I wonder who's peering out the curtains, seeing us coming for dinner.
Do you think he's home?
He better be.
Jaffermil didn't even slow down, though his steps were shorter to compensate for mine. He strode right up to a low, pretty villa behind a scrolled iron fence. The walls blocked in red and yellow, harlequin paint screaming in the heat of the day and covered with a nervous, shifting mass of energy. I cataloged it before I could stop myself. Magi with the subtle spice tang that meant both active and demon-dealing. The gates opened on mage hinges, the curtain of energy parting to let us through.
Someone's expecting us. Knock, knock, demon calling.
I kept a straight face with difficulty. The front of the house, pillared to within an inch of its life and covered with yellow and blue mosaic, I suppressed a shudder, yawned sleepily and regarded us with falsely closed eyes, each window blind with polarized glass. The door was a concrete monstrosity hung on mage hinges and reinforced with shielding so strong it sent a weak glimmer, even through the vicious sunshine.
Someone's paranoid.
My second thought was, I wished I'd had shielding like that when Jaff came to my door the first time.
Too late, sunshine.
Jaff didn't even knock. He simply stepped close to the door and stopped, regarding it with a narrow green gaze. He didn't have to wait long. A breath of cooler air slid out of the door, fragrant with musk, spice, and the thick sweetness of kiffy. The magi in the door was well over 6 lanky feet tall, with large paddlefish hands and skin shaded a rich dark cocoa. His chiseled lips set themselves in something less than a grimace, despite the laugh lines bracketing his mouth and fanning from his eyes. He wore a loose indigo tunic and a pair of blue canvas pants with enough pockets and loops to make any plasteel worker proud. Bare feet resting gently against the floor, placed just so, told me he was combat trained. The scimitar riding his back, its hilt topped with a star sapphire, told me so as well, quietly and with no fuss. He watched Jaffermil the way I might watch a poisonous snake hanging on a tree branch right before it's hurled at me.
Anton, your services are required.
My magi-trained memory gave a twitch, sending a hook through dark waters, fishing for a name to match the familiarity of his face. His tat, fluorescing with power and inked with dull glow to make it visible against his skin, was a Krupsov. Its spurs and claws fitting nicely on his cheek. Then I had him. I'd seen the newspapers and hollow stills, not to mention the retrospectives.
Anton Kagumbi? But you're dead!
The Magi's eyes flicked to me. Their irises so dark the pupil was almost indistinguishable.
So they tell me. My lord, you are welcome in my house, and your companions as well.
He stepped aside, and Jaframel moved forward, taking me with him.
You have not lost your courtesy.
The Magi led us in, his back very straight, and the sandpaper perfume of fear roiling off his aura. The shielding felt familiar, because it was demon-laid. I suspected I knew which demon. It was dark before my eyes adapted. The floor was bare stone, the interior walls, mellow wood hung with loose linen hangings and a few priceless, restrained pieces, mostly masks, none prickling with life or awareness, but still gorgeous and worth a great deal to any shaman for their aesthetics alone. Kagumbi didn't look like the most powerful magi in the world, and he further didn't look like a man who had died years ago in an industrial accident. He looked healthy and unassuming, just like any other combat-trained scion wandering around. He also didn't look like the most dangerous left-hand theorist around, the one who had single-handedly revised the entire canon of those who worship the unspeakable. Kagumbi's laws, four principles of dealing with left-hand magic, had been standardized only because they were so effective. The Hegemony and Puchkin Alliance needed some way of dealing with practitioners who used them for purposes outside the law. In other words, he was responsible for one of the biggest cover-your-ass moments in Hegemony psionic affairs history. All things considered, I figured he had a legitimate reason for wanting to be dead.
He's a left-hander. Dangerous and not particularly careful about casualties. All in one pretty package.
He led us into a small room lined with bookshelves, its polarized windows looking onto a central courtyard teeming with lush green. A bird feeder stood on a graceful curve of iron just outside.
Might I inquire what I'll be doing for you, my lord?
Jaframel glanced down at me, his face unreadable.
You will be opening a door into hell, and keeping it open long enough for one demon to pass through.
I slammed the knife down on a glass tabletop. I didn't even feel bad for killing someone else's furniture.
No!
There is no other way.
Jaframel's face was set and drawn, his eyes veiled as he stared at the knife. He glanced at the others, a look that was unmistakable to the men. They filed out, left us alone.
Creating a scene does not help.
I folded my arms, mostly to disguise how my hands were shaking.
You hid the other half of this knife in hell?
It seemed a fine idea at the time. Lucifer is not at home. He is traveling the wide world, dispensing his own justice and hunting for both us and his wayward androgyne. I may very well go unnoticed.
Lucifer's looking to finish me off. What am I gonna do if he finds me and you're stuck in hell?
Lo, how the mighty have fallen. And I used to be so tough.
Jaframel clasped his hands behind his back and inclined his chin slightly.
Van and McKinley will protect you. If need be, they will sacrifice themselves for your safety.
Oh, that just makes me feel so much better.
Sarcasm. The last refuge of the doomed. Not to mention I don't trust either of them. I'm getting to the point where I don't trust anyone.
We have little time. At any moment, Lucifer may find the other two decoys are merely that, empty boxes. Then he will know how far my betrayal extends. When that happens, it will be war. He will scour the earth with his minions, those he can afford to trust. They should be few, but they are powerful. And he has an endless supply of the low flight to work his will.
This isn't helping.
I would take you with me, were it possible.
The thought of going back into hell dried my mouth. So much for hiding my shaking hands. My fingers bit into my arms.
Gee, thanks, but the last two times I've been, I haven't enjoyed it a bit.
I shook my head, actually feeling all the blood drain from my face. Something occurred to me then,
That's why you went back into hell while we were in Toscano. You went to see if you could get a chance to get your hands on the other half.
All the hosts of hell save me from your ideas, my curious. Yes, I thought it might be possible to retrieve it. The prince kept too close a watch on me.
Which meant you suspected something.
I suspected a time would come when my potential value to Lucifer was outweighed by my status as Anankimel. After all, Lucifer left you alive. When I returned to myself after dormancy, I thought it very likely, so I waited. When he called for us again, I knew half the Knife of Sorrow would perhaps afford me an edge, and you some protection. Then I could collect Sephiramel's half at leisure before anyone discovered my plan.
When were you going to get around to telling me this?
We have had little time of late, and we have even less now.
He reached down, touched the oiled wooden hilt with one golden finger, pulled his hand away as if it had pricked him.
I need your help, my curious.
Funny, you seem to be doing all right on your own. Why don't you even, Lucifer, fight this out and leave me alone?
Nobody in this thing needs my help.
I do. You freed me from Lucifer. You mourned my dormancy. You brought me back. If anyone can be said to own one of my kind, I am yours. Give me the freedom to act in this matter.
You're gonna act whether I give you anything or not. You always have.
Give me some credit for seeking to change. Even at this late hour?
Credit given, Jaff. Fine. If this is what we have to do, let's do it.
I turned on my heel and stalked away from the table, leaving the knife and its spiderweb of broken glass.
This is yours.
I turned my head a bit. He gingerly proffered the knife, hilt first. It would be idiotic not to take it and use it. Especially if Jaff was going to make a suicide run into hell.
Story of your life, sunshine. You're on your own.
I took it. Its unholy satin warmth sliding into my palm.
Either shard will wound beyond measure a demon, even one of the great of light.
Sephiramel's proven it. So has the bird-feathered demon.
Jaff shook his hand as if ridding his skin of the feel of the thing.
I will return. As quickly as I may. Time moves differently in hell.
Don't I know it?
If you're going to do it, do it. Let's not wait around.
The walk back to the hover was too short for serious brooding and far too long for me to feel anything other than horribly exposed and completely vulnerable. I wanted to stay and watch, but Magi don't practice in front of other scions. And as Jaff had pointed out, a doorway to hell was not anything I wanted to be around. Because if something can go in, something might be able to come out. So we all stepped merrily out of Kagumbi's front door, without Jaframel. 10 minutes later, the scar in the hollow of my left shoulder went numb. A varrocaned prickling that probably meant he was nowhere in the normal world. I've felt that before. And it was miserable to have confirmation of what it meant.
Don't worry. He'll be back before you know it.
I said nothing. He shut up. The rest of the walk was accomplished in complete silence. Except for Lucas, who offered a steady monotony of obscenities mixed in different languages. That certainly didn't help my mood. Wet heat lay thick and clotted against every surface. The shadows knife-edged and drenched with color. I carried my sword, wanting it to hand, just in case. My ears pricked as we drew closer to the transport well.
That doesn't sound good.
Precognition tickled my nape under tangled hair.
Still, why assume that every disturbance in Caracas has to do with me?
We rounded the corner.
Because it probably does, Danny.
There was a snarl of hover traffic in holding patterns and a column of black smoke lifting from the depths of the well. I stared.
Shit.
McKinley pushed me back around the corner.
Stay back. Lucas,
on it.
The yellow-eyed man unholstered a plas gun and set off down the street, moving quickly but smoothly.
Who the hell put McKinley in charge?
I swallowed my protest and tried to peer around the corner. McKinley pushed me back, his metallic left hand glittering. A fine sheen of sweat covered the Hellespont agent's forehead.
Just a minute, Valentine. Let's not be hasty.
Leander. And her.
Eve. Whoever she is.
Lucas will see what's going on. We don't want to risk you.
He exchanged a worried look with Van, one I could decipher all too easily.
This changes things a little. Of course, it's faintly possible the column of smoke has nothing to do with us. Faintly.
The semi-industrial district butting up against Kagumbi's quiet neighborhood provided no cover at all. I felt like a huge neon-lit sign.
Tasty demon treat! Just come and take a bite!
Mac.
Van drew a knife.
I know.
I smelled sudden peppery adrenaline from both of them under the dry stasis cabinet smell of Hellespont.
Valentine.
What? There was violence approaching. I didn't mind a bit.
If this gets ugly, you'd better run. As fast and as far as you can. We'll take care of the rest.
We'll see about that.
What is it?
They boiled out of the daylight. Low, unhealthy shapes with skittering legs. And I swallowed a scream before McKinley shoved me so hard I stumbled.
Run!
My sword cleared its sheath.
Oh no! I have had enough of running.
Whoa!
I rocketed forward past Van, who had gone into a crouch as one of the things leapt. An uncoordinated fluid movement twisting its flexible two-part body. It looked like a nightmare of a spider. It was also sickly hot, a feverish, icy heat cutting through the sunshine and raising my hackles. I ducked into a crouch, sword whipping in an arc, blue flame painting the air behind it in a sweet, natural curve. My left hand closed around the hilt of the knife, ripping it free. Fudoshin's split, demonic flesh. I rose from the crouch and leapt, twisting with the follow-through of the slash. The knife whipped out, following the arc. Again, I sliced the hell thing. Fire bloomed. Red-yellow flames ran over the thing's bristling, glassy black hide. The scar hummed with power, flushing along my skin and armoring me in liquid heat.
Has it always been this simple?
The world was no longer a garden of threat and fear. Instead, it was a clear, shimmering web of action and reaction, violence and death. All I had to do was look to see the shining path of killing that would free me from this.
It's never felt so right to destroy everything in my goddamn path.
Valentine!
I pivoted on the ball of my left foot, bringing the sword around again to engage the second spider. Something ripped along my calf, but I paid it no heed. Short thrust, pivoting again, and I plunged the knife into the spider's back. A flood of hot, sickening power jolting up my arm before I pulled the blade free and ducked. Venomous black blood flying. There were so many of them. The reflex of a lifetime spent bounty hunting calculated the odds and came up with something I didn't quite like. They were about to surround me.
I don't care. Kill them all, make them pay.
It hit me hard and low, driving me down as a laser rifle whined. I landed hard, twisting, and almost drove the knife into McKinley's throat before I realized he wasn't one of them. These creatures seemed even more vulnerable to Lay's fire than the Hellhounds.
More of them, and they're massing.
Get up! Now run, goddamn you!
I didn't wait to be told twice. Still, every muscle in me resisted, wanting to turn back and kill until there was nothing left.
Go!
He shoved me again, right between the shoulder blades, and it took every vanishing thread of control I had left not to spin and plunge bright steel into the man's body. His footsteps followed mine. On the far end, another explosion rocked the transport well.
They're certainly going all out, whoever they are.
I instinctively bolted left at the next intersection, impelled by the idea that I had to find some cover.
Valentine!
The city thrummed, a deep well of ambient power at its core beckoning.
There's enough static in those depths to hide me, maybe.
Except for the sudden ravine cutting across our path, a waist-high railing and hover traffic whizzing by. A major traffic lane, an artery feeding the city's throbbing heart.
Oh shit! I'm moving too fast!
I dug my heels in and skidded to a stop. McKinley almost ran into me. He snapped a quick glance down into the hover traffic.
Do you trust me?
What? I looked over my shoulder. The street seemed clear, but the shadows warped in a way I suddenly didn't like. As I looked, one of the shadows developed legs and skittered out into the hot sun.
I said, do you trust me?
He still held a knife, the blade reversed along his right forearm.
No!
Fine!
He grabbed, his left hand tangling in my rig's straps, and hauled. The railing hit me at hip level. He yanked again, and we tumbled over the edge. Instinct pulled my arms and legs close. I twisted like a cat in midair and almost crunched into the side of a freight hover, its wash of warm air stinging my eyes. Gravity eased for a heart-clenching moment. McKinley fell free, and we landed hard on a moving surface. The sound I made might have been funny if it hadn't hurt so goddamn much. He'd aimed us for a hover train, bulleting along at the bottom of the trough. If I'd been human, the fall would have killed me. As it was, I shook the stun out of my head and made it to my feet, sword in one hand and knife in the other. Miraculously, mostly unharmed. Wet warmth dripped into my eyes before black blood sealed the hurt away. The top of the train was dimpled from my landing, lines of force clearly showing in the plasteel.
Hope we didn't scare anyone inside.
McKinley was on all fours, bright crimson blood shooting out of his mouth. He looked terrible, and his ribs on one side were malformed, hammered in by the force of our landing. A motion further down the flexible snake of the hover train caught my eye.
Shit.
I spared another glance at McKinley, whose eyes had rolled back into his head. The violet glow around his left hand flashed, getting brighter, and his ribs snapped out, mending.
He'll live, but not for long if they get to him in this state.
They loped on all fours up the hover train's back, their bald heads glistening in the golden light.
Imps!
Their long, waxen-white, flexible limbs bent in ways no humans would. The train took a sharp bend, my knees flexing to keep me upright. My sword came up, blue flames streaming and dripping from its keen edge, its heart burning white-hot, visible even through daylight.
I could just leave him here. I really could.
I launched myself over McKinley and ran headlong for the imps. Slammed into the first one. The knife rammed into the thing's chest. And its screech was sweet music. The inside of my skull turned into a grass fire, taking the place of thought. I yanked the knife free. The speed-laced wind stung my eyes. It didn't matter. I wasn't using my eyes to track them anyway. They were smears of black diamond fire on the landscape of power, interlocking cascades of intent and threat. I lost track of myself in the clear light of what Jado called mind no mind, moving with a speed and clarity I had rarely achieved in my human life and never since. Until now.
The enemy vanishes, Daniel-chan. And all you face is yourself.
The leap uncoiled, my knees coming up, and I kicked, my boot meeting another imp's face. Its head just smashed like a watermelon. It was satisfying, to say the least. But not as satisfying as carving the thing's arm off on my way down. The flood of feverish power up my arm from the knife was almost natural. I was laughing as they swarmed me, maddened by daylight or by my presence, I couldn't tell. McKinley grabbed the back of my rig again. The train halted for one vertiginous second, and I realized what was happening as it fell away from underfoot and we launched out into space again. The hover train was heading down a sharp, almost vertical slope to plunge underground, probably a commuter line, and we were in free fall again as one imp leapt the sudden distance, slavering and champing for my throat. We landed hard, something snapping in my right leg, a sudden sickening sheet of pain bolting through the clarity I'd just achieved. I fetched up on my side. The freight hover we'd landed on bounced, a sudden application of force controlled by its whining gyros. The imp vanished into the slipstream.
Oh, ow, ouch! Segment, Zaius! Why does it take getting the shit beat out of me before I feel human again?
Don't ever do that again! God damn it, I'm trying to protect you!
You didn't look in any shape to take on those guys, buddy boy.
My right femur crunched with pain as the bone swiftly healed itself. Demon metabolism running fiercely, heat blurring out from my skin. It actually felt cold within the wind howling at us, the freight hover moving at a good clip away from the train line. Caracas wheeled above and below. Ambient power stroked my skin, interference rising like steam to cloak my aura.
This is better. This I can work with.
I tested my right leg. It hurt like hell, but it was better. I made it up to hands and knees, then got my feet underneath me. Made it up. My right leg ached fiercely, the bone assaulted and unhappy. The scar sent another warm pulse of power down my skin, and I was suddenly glad Jaffermel's repair work on my shields had held up.
And glad that neither Imp nor Spider Thing has been able to use power against me.
McKinley grabbed at my shoulder and I controlled the twitch that could have buried the knife in his guts.
Twitchy, twitchy, Necromance. Mellow down, easy.
I came back fully into myself and felt suddenly...
whole. Cleansed.
The fire of rage had burned something sticky and viscous away from me. I'd fought them off. I'd won.
I like this feeling. I want it to last.
I tore myself out from under McKinley's hand.
Watch it!
We've got to get off this thing!
He checked the sky. My eyes followed the loops and curves, hovers delicately woven into streams of unsnarled traffic.
This one's remote from the real-time AI controller, probably, since it didn't change course when we thumped into it. At least, let's hope so.
There!
McKinley pointed. A residential high-rise, with the hover lane going directly over it. The fall was bad, but not immense. And there was plenty of room for error.
You want me to break my leg again?
Better than the alternative!
Dark circles had bloomed under his eyes, and he was chalk pale. The violet glow around his left hand had subsided.
Guess so!
The knife slid back into its sheath.
What about Van and Lucas?
They can take care of themselves! They'll provide a distraction! It's part of the plan!
There's a plan? Plan? What plan?
Standard for bodyguard duty! If we get separated, Van goes low and fast and loud, drawing everyone away! I get the package and we rendezvous!
He winced. His ribs didn't look staved in as they had before. I wondered just how fast a Hellasfront agent healed.
Where?
Where else? Hegemony Europa. Paradisa, actually. We've got a safe place there. That is, if it hasn't been blown. That town's always crawling with demons. Don't worry, Valentine. We're gonna keep you in one piece for our Lord, whether you like it or not.
Paradise started out as a Roma Taliano colony, back in the mists of time. During the era of the religions of submission, Frange became a country, and the city grew like a pearl around the muddy banks of a river now running deep underground. Layer upon layer of history added itself to each street, each house, each tower. During the Awakening, the old Frange government, still not folded into the nascent hegemony, threw open the city as a sanctuary for the emerging psionic community, sheltering them from the ravages of the evangelicals of Gilead. Kochbabar Gilead had pronounced psions abominations, and the beginning years of the Awakening were marked by death camps and persecutions, rising to a fever pitch during the bloodbath that led to the only tactical nuclear strike of the 70 Days War, the bombing of the Vegas territory. Paradise, however, was shelter for any scion who could reach it. and the awakening accelerated even as the evangelicals choked to death on their own fanaticism, their vestigial gift to the social fabric, the Lutter Party, and their xenophobic hatred of scions and paranormals, not to mention the lingering distaste of normals for anything psionic or paranormal. Paradise shines. The city throbs with light. Glowing spires crisscrossed with moving walkways, hanging gardens, open-air cafes with climate control, each zipping hover gilded and each slick board leaving a glittering trail in the effervescent air. Paradise has been built on for centuries, and even though everything is hegemony Europa now, still the old Frange shines through in all its aesthetic and chauvinistic splendor. Above ground, on the bright side, Paradise is often used in holovid representations of Nirvana, and artists have wandered its upper byways for centuries, sketching and immortalizing. Underground, under the centuries of accumulated human habitation, is something else. It's chill-fed urban blight and more. The rule is assassination, stealth, and debauchery. Some parts of the dark side are mostly safe for regular citizens to go slumming. In those slices, the bordellos and hash dens are strictly policed by hegemony police regulars, hegemony federal marshals, and a contingent of freelancers known as the Jard Parisan. The rest of the dark side isn't somewhere you want to go, even on a bounty. I wondered if the running sore of urban decay would begin to heal now that there was a cure for Chlormon 13. Chill. 2 days after escaping Caracas during a bloody sunset, as stowaways on a transocean freight hover no less, I found myself sitting very still on a chair in the middle of a dark little hole of a room, my sword across my knees. There hadn't even been a chance to find a scabbard for the blade, despite the fact that wandering around with naked steel was likely to draw notice. Outside the curtained window, the dark side seethed. The street was narrow, lit only by sodium arc lamps. Down here, under the rest of the city, it was always night. The immense press of centuries and dirt overhead threatened to trigger claustrophobia with every breath I took. The wards I'd put on the walls and window, subtle, gentle wards meant only to warn me if someone was looking at the room, shivered uneasily. I wished I could shield the room like Jaffa Mel did, but that would have been like advertising my presence on the local hollow boards. My shoulder was still numb. That meant Jaff was in hell, far away from the normal world, if anything could be said to be normal nowadays. The ban on Magi practicing hadn't slowed down the ferment one bit, scions being notoriously edgy when denied the chance to practice their gifts. Magi were still showing up dead or going missing, and the hegemony had its hands full with the confusion that was causing. Industrial espionage and theft were at an all-time high. The Hollow News was full of chaos and destruction. There were other whispers, too, of things glimpsed on the street in broad daylight, things not seen since the Awakening, when psionic and sorcerous talent flowered and the world was turned on its ear again, taking a collective jump into the future and struggling free of the era of submission. The underworld of bounty hunters and mercenaries was alive with the news that I was out there somewhere, and worth a fantastical sum, dead or alive, if you could just figure out who to deliver me to. Information on my movements would fetch a fine price, too. Since I hadn't moved from this room since we got to Paradise, I could only imagine what was going on. McKinley had made one run for supplies, not bringing back a scabbard, and returning pale and shaking just a little, smelling of demon and adrenaline. He brought back food, distilled water, and 2 medikits. And he didn't hold it against me when I met him at the door with a projectile gun, my finger tight on the trigger, and the knife in my other hand. I was liking him more than I had, which still wasn't much. Still, I slipped the sheathed knife inside my bag. The throbbing whisper of the thing set me on edge, and I didn't need more of a reason to lose my temper. I had plenty of reasons anyway, and a naked sword as well. I held on to the armrests. The room was in a run-down little boarding house deep in one of the worst sections of the Dark Side. Enough pain and despair, not to mention illicit sex, spikes and eddies of violence, and just plain psychic noise, to almost cover up the stain of my aura on the landscape of ambient power. It was barely furnished, just a cot in this chair, and a ramshackle table made of splinters and glue. McKinley had taken to sleeping on the floor, his hand on the hilt of a knife and his eyelids lifting whenever there was the slightest noise. I didn't sleep. Instead, I closed my eyes and breathed. Waiting is the hardest part of anything, bounty hunt or combat run. The circular mental motion can be maddening. Add to that McKinley pacing, peering out the windows, or dozing lightly with one eye open, and you had a recipe for wearing my nerves down to bare threads. Not that there was much thread to wear off. I slid out of the chair, settling down cross-legged on the floor. My bag was flung near the chair legs. I opened the top flap, laying my sword aside but within easy reach, and dug for a familiar hank of blue silk, knotted tightly. Soon, my worn deck of tarot cards with their blue and black crosshatch backs lay in a nest of silk. I scooped them up, smoothed the silk out. McKinley tensed, turned his head to watch. His profile was almost ugly. A narrow nose and the bruising of exhaustion under his eyes, his mouth set like he tasted something bitter. The cards almost laid themselves out. Two of blades, death, with a skull's grimace looking pained instead of its usual saucy smile. The tower, screaming faces and shattered stones. The devil card fluttered as I laid it down, despite the absolute stillness. The next card was blank.
Well, that's useless, Danny. It only tells you something you already know.
My rings sparked, snapping as power swirled in the charged air. Something about to happen.
What is it?
I've seen these cards before.
My eyes flicked toward the door. I froze. Memory curled over inside my skull, past sliding seamlessly into the present. McKinley ghosted between me and the door, his left hand suddenly aglow with violet light. My right hand curled around the sword's hilt, yet I didn't try to push myself up from the floor. I smelled musk and baking bread, and I thought I knew who it was. McKinley glanced back at me, black eyes narrowed. The knife's humming rattled against my hip.
You might as well answer that.
Hey, if they're knocking, they haven't attacked yet.
He eased forward, weight balanced cat-like.
Be ready.
For what?
I nodded. McKinley edged toward the door. He was four steps from it when the knob turned and the locks flipped, one by one. The open door revealed the dirty hallway outside and a slice of weak golden light from one unshattered bulb. There, in the doorway, stood a demon.
You'd better come in.
Eve stepped over the lintel delicately like a stray cat. Her pale hair caught all the available light, a torch in darkness. Behind her, a strange familiar face swam out of the darkness of the hall. Anton Kagumbi's hair was damp, beads of water clinging to it, and the star sapphire in the hilt of his scimitar winked. My cheek burned. His tat moved under his skin, the faintly fluorescing dye adding a highlight to the gleam of his eyes. McKinley lifted his left hand, the violet light streaming in weird geometric patterns from his fingertips. His knees loosened, and if Eve had come for me, or so much as pitched her weight forward at the wrong moment, I think he might have actually tried to kill her.
Okay. I never liked you much before, Sunshine, but I'm beginning to change my mind.
McKinley, close the door.
Who's the person using my voice? She sounds like someone you don't want to fuck with.
He gave me a look that suggested I was a few bananas short of a full sundae.
Valentine!
Shut the door!
I made my hand unloose with an effort of will. He moved, the geometrics streaming from his fingers.
Kagembe.
He bowed slightly. The knives strapped to his rig looked well-oiled and loved, and he eschewed plasguns, for a pair of serviceable 9mm projectile Smith Wessons. Just my type of gun. I braced myself. Eve?
Dante?
She tilted her head a little, and I got the idea she would have curtsied. She was cool, calm, and clean in a long, deep indigo Chinese collared shirt and tailored khakis. Low blue Verano heels took another two steps forward, seemingly not noticing McKinley's immediate move to put himself between us.
Mother?
The word was salt in the wound. I shook it away and rose. How'd you find me?
We share a bond.
And I suppose having that magi right there didn't hurt.
Let's just get to the point. What do you want?
And do you know I have the knife? Or half of it, anyway.
A shrug, her shoulder lifting and dipping gracefully.
What I have always wanted. To survive. And not so incidentally, my freedom. Surely you can understand.
Even if you have to lie to me to get it?
The room rattled a bit. Her smell wrapped around me, cajoling, teasing. And I found with a burst of relief that I didn't respond to it. The black hole in my head stirred uneasily. Her bright blue eyes actually dropped. She looked, of all things, ashamed. Like a kid caught cheating on a Mentaflow test.
Is this another trick?
Would you have believed me if I looked like this?
She spread her hands, long supple fingers hiding her claws.
What could I have done? Tell me.
Gee, guess we'll never find out, will we?
I studied her face, searching for some echo of myself in the lines of demon bones, the suppleness of her skin, the gaunt beauty.
There's no human left in her. Was there ever? It was burned away. In hell.
I could have hated her for it, except I knew what it felt like. I'd felt that burning myself.
Did she ever regret it? Is she capable of regretting it now? How long will it be before I'm incapable of regretting the same thing?
Stubbornness rose up inside me.
No. I decide. I'm human. Wherever it counts, wherever I have enough of me left to make it, I'm human.
Hollow words or not, at least it sounded good. Where's Leander?
I don't know. I had enough to do rescuing this human.
Eve took a half step back, avoiding McKinley and keeping an avenue of escape open. Her gas flame blue gaze flicked toward the darkened window, the dark side pressing against dusty plasglass. Kagumbi didn't look in the least discouraged or even afraid. The smell of his fear was muted under the screen of Eve's perfume. Still, his gaze settled on McKinley, and I could have sworn the Magi was daring the Hellesfront agent to look at him.
Did you abandon Leander, Eve? Did you even stop to think before you did? What about Velocal?
I discarded the questions as useless.
You're here, you must want something. What do you want me to do?
The eldest?
That's what you're actually after, I bet.
You can find me, but not him? Oh, that's right. You've got a pet magi there. Which side of the street is he working?
The magi tensed, but still didn't speak, his liquid dark eyes on the hand clasping my sword hilt.
Why is he looking at me like that? He's hanging around with demons far more dangerous than I'll ever be.
Then again, he was a left-hander. The thought that maybe I'd end up worshipping the unspeakable myself if I kept breaking my word was chilling, to say the least.
Can he tell?
We share a link, Dante. I did not lie about that.
Eve almost seemed to shrink. A little girl in a demon's body. McKinley moved restlessly, straining against a leash.
Get to the point, Eve. What do you want?
I didn't think it would make any difference. But she opened her mouth, and she told me. Silence like dark wine filled the room. McKinley's eyes widened, a ring of white around the dark irises like a spooked horse's. I didn't blame him.
You want me to do what?
So much for dignity.
Kagumbi folded his arms, one eyebrow lifting, like he didn't believe I was making such a big deal about it. Eve still looked very small, and very young, and very much like a demon, her eyes the brightest thing in a drab, dull room.
I need time. Both to gather my allies and plan. You can provide me with that time.
and enough confusion to distract anyone we need to. No Magi has your power, by virtue of what you are. Enough power to do what must be done. I need your help, Dante.
Oh, ouch. The way into my psyche. The key precious few of my human friends knew about. I need, not want, need. I am a sucker for being needed. Jace had known that. Doreen had too. And so had Gabe. Does Javermill know?
That seemed unlikely.
He doesn't have the first clue about what makes me tick. Maybe that's why he loves me. Maybe that's why I love him.
The realization hit me between the eyes like a projectile bullet.
Eve needs my help, certainly. But I can help Javermill maybe too. By doing something. Not just waiting like a lost suitcase, yearning to be picked up and rescued. I can play their games back at them. At least see how well I can.
Besides, no human Magi could do what Eve needed. It would take plenty of sheer power. The same power that thundered through the mark on my shoulder.
Maybe it's time to use it, instead of moaning about how different it makes me.